Blog Talk Radio.
You take the blue pill. The story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to be. You take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane.
No, it's Max, Darrow, and D-Bert, your host for the Comic Shop Show.
Good evening, folks. I'm getting some feedback. Okay. Why am I getting feedback? All right, let's just get into it. We have a show to do. Let's get into a quick nerdcore jam, and then we will proceed with the show. Hold on, folks. Again, welcome to the Comic Shop.
You are now listening to the West Coast Avengers mixtape.
And all the people say,
I remember way back when.
And everybody say,
I remember way back when.
And all the people say,
I remember way back when.
And everybody say,
I remember way back when.
And all the people say,
I remember way back when.
And everybody say,
I remember way back when.
And all the people say,
I remember way back when.
And everybody say,
I remember way back when.
Yeah.
These streets lead back to middle America, done. You turn around, it's like you're trying to chase the setting sun. Cause everybody got their place, no matter what the color of his face. Sisters and brothers, fathers and mothers, we all struggle just to make ends meet. And when you fail, you find a landing on the crack between the concrete. A mother working two jobs so that her son eats. Father's long gone, sister's got a baby mouth to feed. No first world problems, cause I can see a man starving on the streets, trying to sleep over the car alarms. I seen a man fight to keep his home, only to find it gone, swallowed by collapses in the housing market. And still I know a man, grew up in Georgia's own, watching his brother leave for war and never come home. He wants to honor his memory in the fading light, so he tries to take up the good fight.
And I believe in the USA, and
okay, folks. Welcome once again to Afternerd Radio featuring the Comic Shop. 6 p.m. broadcast. Of course, we have 7 p.m. with Afternerd featuring Captain Kirk. Sorry about the intro. It's a bit off balance because of feedback. I rectified it. It's troublesome. When you get feedback, it drives you crazy, folks. The call-in number, 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. The crew is in full effect. Star date, December 2nd, 2012. Let's get into it. First up, the captain. Come on, Captain, let's go.
You know the game is messed up once they start saying, I'm a thug geek. Whole game gets messed up then.
Oh, yeah. Well, didn't we talk about this young gentleman? He's a quote-unquote nerd nigga. Quote-unquote. You know, you can't ride both sides of the fence, gentlemen or
messing
ladies. You can't do it. You're messing
up
the game. All right, and without further ado, we have to bring in the irascible and disagreeable Daryl B.
It just goes to show that like the N-word, the other N-word, nerd, or the G-word, geek, has been co-opted by the mainstream, and no one knows what it is anymore. But my bones feel what it's like to be a nerd,
Yes, we all, you know, we live this life in varying degrees of nerddom. And gentlemen, and of course our listening audience, we're going to talk about comics, and we're going to do what we always do. But I do want to open up the discussion based on an article that someone actually tweeted to me. A gentleman tweeted to me, I think Jay Williams, if I'm not mistaken, shouting out Jay Williams, who tweeted this to me a few days ago. He wasn't, from what I gather, he really wasn't comfortable with this piece. It's a blog entry, folks. You can go to afternerd.com. There's a link to it, a blog entry from the Washington Post that talks about the rise of the black nerd. Now, one would think that this would be a good thing. The article doesn't give off that vibe per se. There's a little bit of reticence that you can feel from the piece that says that, well, you don't have to be a nerd if you don't want, you know, because you speak well, because you have certain interests, because you are articulate, these things, maybe you don't want to be classified as a black nerd, as if there's a problem with it. And even folks within our inner circle, Daryl, our friend who owns her own shop, shouting out Donna from Superhero Comics in New York, Floral Park, New York, shouting out her business. She winces when I use the term nerd. She doesn't like it. And I was trying to explain to her that, you know, it's almost like explaining the other N-word, which I don't agree with, really. But when I was trying to explain with her, well, you know, nerd is different. It's, you know, when I go into nerd or geek and I use this terminology and I use it respectfully, because we have taken these terms back. I can't believe we're having this conversation. But, yes, taking this N-word back, not the other one, she doesn't like it. She really has a problem with, and I say, nah, you know, nerd is a good thing now. Not that it wasn't always before, but she doesn't want to hear the word nerd in her store. So did you get a chance to check out this piece, Daryl? I believe I sent it to you.
Yeah, I read the piece, and here's where the writer goes
Uh-oh.
Off the rails a little bit, okay? I will say it like this, and you just follow it. Me, I'm geeky about several things. You guys know about my sports obsession, all right? You obviously, everybody out there knows about my love for fantasy, comic books, sci-fi, you know. And I wear it proudly that, yeah, I love to dive into this stuff. I get geeked up about this stuff, okay? You could be geeky about anything, but the problem is, right, a geek/nerd has a certain look to them, and it's what drives me crazy when I see athletes wearing the fake glasses and go like, yeah, I'm getting in touch with my inner nerd. No, you're not, because you're the type that used to beat me up when you saw me reading in the hallways. Don't give me that. Alright? Or you see some of these rappers with the small backpacks and stuff and say, yeah, I'm doing this for the backpackers, as opposed to freaking flipping me over in stalls and giving me swirlies and actually dropping me in the commode where I'm bleeding all over the toilet. Listen, you can say you're a geek all you want. Unless you've gone through some of the stuff that I know I experienced, you have no geek cred. And he brought up the perfect example for me of a guy who's a geek but has survived through it, so to say. All right? Childish Gambino, a.k.a. Donald Glover.
Mm-hmm.
You listen to his songs and the treatment he got as a kid, I relate to. I'm right there with, you know, the making fun. His voice is a little bit too high. How dare you talking to my girl? Go back to class. You're the ultimate fish out of water. That's the ultimate nerd cred. If you are in a place and you have a love for something and you get ostracized, beaten up, made fun of, all of that, so just because you love a certain thing, guess what? That's where the line is. You could tell me it's fashionable all you want. The scars on my skull and the scars on my head and my back and my legs from younger when I got beaten up tells me you'll never know my pain. So don't even try it. Don't even call it a fashion sense. No. My bones tell me a different story. Back to you, Afro Nerd.
Yeah, all right. You know what? I'm always about specifics, right? Let's go to the article in question. I want to read from it briefly. Again, folks, check out this link from AfroNerd.com that gets into this article from the Washington Post. It's an extension of The Root. We mentioned The Root a lot, TheRoot.com, which is Dr. Henry Louis Gates, his child, so to speak, his literary child by way of the Washington Post. Anyway, it's an article written by Clinton Yates, and it's entitled Donald Glover, Issa Rae, Baratunde Thurston, The Rise of the Black Nerd. He's posing it as a question. Nerd culture has hit a cultural high point. More than ever, people are going out of their way to self-identify as nerdy as kind of an ironic way to put an affable twist on parts of their personalities that they might otherwise be ashamed of. Coffee nerds, political nerds, video game nerds, etc. It seems that being a person that enjoys anything related to sci-fi or, say, intellect has transformed part of our nation into a roving gang of nerds incapable of finding that ubiquitous quality of cool that we're all apparently searching for. Take Chris Hardwick, the television personality that hosts the Nerdist podcast, or the characters of one of my favorite sitcoms, The Big Bang Theory. It's based around a group of scientists that are socially inept that they become lovable on their own. And while listening to NPR the other day, Public Radio Nerd, I came across something new to me, the black nerd. Let me interrupt here, folks. I was called the Afro Nerd on NPR 3 or 4 years ago. All right. My pain doesn't go as deep as the great Daryl B's, but I do find it interesting that now they're coming up with the black nerd. When I coined the term Afro Nerd and appeared as the Afro Nerd on NPR, I'm just saying, and was on the show with Baratunde Thurston himself on quite a few occasions. A matter of fact, I'll even make these appearances available on the blog and on the Facebook, on our Facebook account pretty soon. So I'm just putting it out there. Okay, I'm kind of interrupting that. All right, anyway, says, in the story, journalist Eric Deggans described how he felt like his existence in this blurred world. Again, the Franken word, blurred. Afro nerd is better, isn't it? It is. All right, anyway. The creature is filled with rage. I'm having my moment here, folks. Blurred world was a shame to him prior to recently. The rise of the black nerds upon us, unite. Okay, I'm going to skip around. They talk about they're bringing in J.J. Evans, they're bringing in Steve Urkel, and they're bringing in Raj. All right. Let me go around here a little bit because I want to get where he kind of veers off for me. Let's see. Okay, he says, I also hope the rise of the black nerd stereotype doesn't make kids, young people feel like they are suddenly, like they suddenly have to start fitting in with black nerds. Let me repeat this, folks, because this is making me angry. You need to be on that button, Captain, with the creatures filled with rage. I can't find it. You might want to play this as I'm saying this. I also hope the rise of the black nerd stereotype doesn't make kids, young people, feel like they suddenly have to start fitting in with black nerds to feel like they're allowed to enjoy so-called nerd things. Part of the reason why the rise of the nerd culture has become so annoying is that they are highly exclusionary when it comes to allowing their kind in. Well, you know what, Daryl? There may be something to this right here.
Wait.
The creature is driven by rage.
All right, so now he's gone from talking about the rise of the black nerd, okay, that phrase you just wrote, we got to be careful with our kids. Oh, my God, don't be around those black nerds. Oh God, something wrong is going to happen. Oh my God. This is written by a freaking this three. This is written by a jock, a glory boy, a guy that's past his time, and he's seeing that the parts of our culture that he picked on for the longest while is now starting to climb their way up to the top, and he's getting left in the dust because everybody's liking stuff that, oh, how could they like that? Oh, he's beginning to sound like one of the jocks from Revenge of the Nerds who all of a sudden get in touch with the inner nerdiness, and it's scaring them. That's what this article sounds like.
Captain, you have some remarks. What's up?
The creature is driven by rage.
Well, listen, I don't consider myself a geek or a nerd, but I respect geekdom and nerdism 100% because I realize something. The geeks and nerds eventually inherit the earth. In the future, it will be their world. You know why? Geeks and nerds can do something the general population shies away from. They could do math and they could do science. You understand? And as you see where the world is headed, look at all the technology and everything else. The general population can't really do much. But the geeks and nerds can definitely do that. So who ends up on top? You've seen it in movies. They hint things in the movies. And then a generation later, that's what eventually happens. So it will be the geek and nerds world. So, you know, what they've done here, the geekism and nerdism now, it's starting to go pop to a certain extent, and they want to claim it. But the problem is, I have to agree somewhat with Daryl. I don't agree with everything, but I have to agree with somewhat. You have to have a certain amount of credibility in order to be an actual geek and nerd. And as this unfolds, you know, you will see. When you look at MIT and you look at all these other places, it's geeks and nerds. It's not a general population. You know, when someone develops, you know, a new robot or somebody like that, it's normally a geek or nerd. So the big people with money is going to be geeks and nerds. That's the reality of it. That guy that wanted to be cool or whatever, quote unquote cool, it's not going to be you. You're going to have to come to the job. You're going to have to get a job from the geek and nerd. Maybe he'll like you. Maybe he won't. That's the reality of it, you know? And that's what's going to happen. And you can see it going that way. And that's the reality of it. That's all I wanted to say.
Well, listen, you know, I've been saying this for a long time. And, again, this is the reason why I developed this site. And you gentlemen are involved with it and help me to and are continuing to help me grow this thing. But, you know, think about it. You know, there's no place, and I repeat this all the time. It's going to be a MP3 file that's constantly on repeat. I'm sorry, folks, but you know, the problem is there is no place for the black nerd to go comfortably, and you can see why. Because even in an article that's supposed to be giving us a high five and giving us our props, it's a backhanded compliment. Because now, he basically, you know, we don't want, you know, we got to fear our children becoming too smart and being nerdy. Are you insane? God forbid one of these black nerds comes up with a black Facebook analog. God forbid it happens. You know, it'll go public, it becomes worth $1 billion. Oh, no, we don't want that to happen. We have to fear that. But there's no fear of Waka Flocka, of the next Waka Flocka. Okay? Come on now. Come on now.
Hey, and look at it this way, right? All right? What's been the biggest thing over the last 10 years? The rise of the video game, the rise of the personal technology. I guarantee you jocks didn't create that.
They rely on it.
They cry when they can't get a tech help. And who's giving them the tech help? You're coming into our land now, jocks. So all you posers.
Don't make me angry. You only like me when I'm angry.
Oh, you know, all you guys too cool for school, all the cute cheerleaders that like shunned us and stuff, guess who you're coming back to? Yo.
Well, you know what, Darryl, you reminded me that, you know, all these jocks and posers and cheerleaders, they're in line in the Apple Store, at the Apple Store like everybody else. I find that very interesting. You know, there's a seductive quality to this nerd world that many people are finding themselves involved in, and it has become unavoidable. I've seen thugs now, and I can say thugs are people who have kind of a street vibe, but when you introduce them to certain things, it's seductive. They can't help but they cannot help that this world that we have created, that we live, is an interesting one, and it is a fun one. But it's hard to be a thug and be into video games and being into Hunger Games and all that kind of stuff. It's very hard to balance those two worlds. I mean, I think I'm going to go to a musical break, gentlemen, but I was just thinking of a nerd moment, an indirect nerd moment that the captain would appreciate, because you referenced this famous movie incident in New Jack City where Christopher Williams, he caught that quote-unquote light skin barb by Wesley Snipes, you know, that infamous moment where he gets stabbed in the hand.
Mm-hmm.
But Wesley Snipes was the thug that had to rely on Christopher Williams for setting up the computer system for his drug business. That was an early moment. That was an early moment that when the thug, even the thug, cannot operate unless there's a geek in his life. The geek has to be the doctor that removes the bullet wound from his buttocks, or the attorney that has to represent him, or the techno geek that has to set up his technology to run his underground business. And I saw that was 20 years ago in New York, in New Jack City. I'm just saying, folks. I'm just saying, we got to cut this stuff out, but we're going to go to the next topic and go to a musical break. But God forbid that nerdism, as the captain has aptly pointed out, God forbid nerdism actually spreads among our youth, where they might become more erudite, more articulate, or more interested in geeky things. God forbid Star Wars crosses their lips.
Weird Al. It's funny. I forget the name of the rapper, but it happened after the Coolio incident with Weird Al, where another rapper, where another rapper goes like, was asked a question about Weird Al. No, it was actually Puff Daddy, P. Diddy. He said it. He goes like this. He goes, hey, Weird Al could do my songs all at once. If he's doing my songs, it means my song went over big. Big enough to do a parody. So, hey, right now, nerd culture is being parodied. We've gotten that big. But the problem is, as you see, there's some facets of culture that just can't accept it.
Well, it can't accept it from a black perspective. That's what makes it very frightening. We do need black nerds, because the thug trope has run its course, gentlemen. It has run its course. And it seems that even when it's favorable, there's still a hint of backhanded compliment. Very foul, gentlemen. All right. In perfect nerd fashion, let's go to a quick musical break. Saturday Morning Cartoons, a redux. This is Dig performing the Fat Albert theme on Afro Nerd Radio. Okay, let's groove, folks. We'll be right back.
Yeah.
folks, we're back once again. That was the group Dig performing the Fat Albert theme from a Saturday morning cartoon Redux. Definitely pick it up. It's still available. Go to Amazon, definitely. All right. You know what? I want to read quickly before we go do a quick turnaround, quick transition. I want to go into the chat room with our stalwart loyal listenership. Friend of the show, Tricknology, says, Black geekdom threatens the thug archetype. First of all, I love it when I see folks of color coming up with terms like archetype. That goes to show you that this, we attract the right audience. Okay, anyway, black geekdom threatens the thug archetype superimposed on African-American culture. Racist and brainwashed Negroes don't want this kind of change in imagery. I have to agree with you, Tricknology. We're fighting different wars. There are different camps that just have a problem with showcasing intelligent black folk. And even in an article that should be high-fiving it once again, I know I'm going to repeat, but it amazes me, that they say we don't want our kids to be scared from getting into that clique. The gangs, the Bloods, the Crips, the Latin Kings, the MS-13, all that stuff, is, you know, that's not an issue. We got to fear the nerd gang, though. We have to fear them. Come on. I know I might be being a slightly hyperbolic, but that's kind of what this guy says, though. He is saying that. Be careful of your kids, being fearful of being labeled nerds or falling into that clique. We don't want them to fall into that clique.
Yeah, you know what it reminds me of? I know the captain will remember it. I think it was Chris Rock's first or second stand-up. I think it was Bigger and Blacker, where he talks about how in the community, prison is more cherished. If you went to prison, it's more cherished than going to college. Oh, you got a degree? You got a degree? Okay, how long do you think it would take me to kick your butt? You're so smart. You know, I think Afriner hit it right on the head. It's like you have that one vision. Oh, we're more athletic, we're stronger, da da. And then you got a chance here for a group of African Americans, black people, to be smarter. And it's looked down upon, it's frowned upon, and people are worrying about this. So we're worrying about being more smart. Why does that make sense? Back to you, Afro-Nerd.
Yeah, real quick, I do want to shout out someone because we have to start to really pool our efforts with other nerds that are out there trying to promote their wares. Darryl, I'm pretty sure you're aware of this gentleman. Black Nerd Comedy on YouTube. It's pretty good, actually. Very funny. He has these black nerd rants, and he's getting more popular. But again, just simply go to YouTube. If you get past all the damn advertising, that YouTube really sucks now. Incidentally, folks, it's not as smooth as it used to be. Anyway, go to simply input black nerd or black nerd comedy, and this gentleman has he has embraced it completely. He has all the figurines in the background, and he's very comical, and again, black nerd comedy, and he has his own YouTube account. Check him out. Very popular gentleman. All right, turnaround time. We're at the midway point of the show already. I happen to come across this piece at the comicbookmovie.com website. Again, comicbookmovie.com website. And they were talking about this upcoming event series that DC Comics is putting out, I guess the first quarter of 2013. And it's something that's been done before, but I believe they're going to go a little deeper into the mythology. It's something that, of course, is a no-brainer. It's a event series that's going to change up the customary matchups of heroes and their respective villains. You know that Batman is always fighting the Joker. Superman is always fighting Lex Luthor. Wonder Woman is always fighting Cheetah, and so forth. Flash and Gorilla Grodd, blah, blah, blah. In this case, they're going to exchange heroes with other villains belonging to other heroes. So in this case, hopefully, you know, we've seen skirmishes between Batman or Bruce Wayne with Lex Luthor. But I think they're going to go deeper into it with this series. Now, first I want to talk about this. I want to talk about this, what they're proposing. Because Batman versus Lex Luthor would be very interesting. And actually, Joker versus Superman, if they do it the right way. Because you would think, oh, that's a no-brainer. But Joker is a maniacal genius. He's even crazy. He's a more criminally insane version of Lex Luthor, if you want to be honest about it. If they did it the right way, if they have the right writers, this could be a very good thing. But it made me think of something else also. What changes would we make? This is what I'm posing to the crew going around the horn. What changes would you make to comic books, whatever, you know, whatever company you're into, if you were the new editor-in-chief? What would you do immediately? This would be one of them, exploring this kind of stuff. Captain, let's go to you first. What are your thoughts about this new event series coming up next year? And also as a larger issue, what changes would you make? Would you personally like to see, if you could, in how these comic books come out?
All right. First of all, I think the changes, because I always thought it was always about the villain. I didn't really think it was so much about the hero. I always felt the villain is what makes the superhero. You know, so, you know, in me reading comics, getting into comics, I was always pretty much into the villain, because I always thought the villains, you know, a lot of times this was just a lot crazier, of course, which makes sense. That's why they're villains. And a lot of times their power sets were a lot better. So this change is excellent. And just as you said, Batman versus Lex Luthor would be extremely interesting. You know, so along these lines, I like this. I definitely like this. I'm so much into it, so much into it. Now, what I would like to change would be, what I would like to see is more crossovers. You know, that's what I would like to see. Or should I say crossovers in general? And you say, what do you mean by crossovers? DC, some of DC characters stepping into Marvel Universe, stepping into DC. And that opens up a whole range of madness, a whole range of mythos that you could play with all day long. Of course we know, you know, the financial aspects and everything else, but putting all that aside, let's forget about that. If we could just do it and forget about who's got to get paid, who owns what property, who owns this, who owns that, if we could just do it, just from the comic book reader perspective, that's something I would like to see. That's a change I would like to get into. And I think it would be extremely flamboyant, extremely charismatic, extremely tantalizing, extremely interesting. Back to you, Sir Afro Nerd.
Yeah, you know, the House of Ideas, Marvel Comics, and the great Daryl B is aware of this. They have done this as a subtle practice anyway. Growing up, the Kingpin was, by and large, a Spider-Man villain. But then at some point, he phased over into being an exclusive Daredevil villain. And now he has progressively gone over to the Punisher as his villain. And it's been done very subtly over a number of years, and no one's really said anything. But it's just something I just started noticing that, oh, you know, but early 70s, he was really a Spider-Man villain. So DC, I think, has been a latecomer, but we've seen them do this, but it seems to be kind of a tongue-in-cheek kind of thing, or it's been like a one-shot. It's never been part of, well, I guess it's still considered part of canon. But to me, you should see more of this. The more I think about things, and this is going dovetailing into a larger discussion on, like, on changes I'd like to see in comics in general. There's so much mythology in comic books, and there's so many incidental facts in comics, and Darryl knows about this. They leave, as I always say colloquially, these dangling participles, and they never go back to them. As an off-the-cuff thing, there was a mentioning, I think someone mentioned, or they explored this in DC in Krypton's mythology. They explored that there were black Kryptonians, but they did it as a very minor anecdote. They said that there's an island called Vathlos, V-A-T-H-L-O-S, I think. The blacks had a separate island, which is funny within itself. It was like just a haphazard thing. For those who are familiar with Krypton, of course, Krypton is the birthplace, the dying planet of Clark Kent, Kal-El, Superman. It's a dying planet. And in typical 1938 fashion, everything was white. Even aliens are white human analogs. The entire Earth was white. No, I'm sorry. The entire planet was a white planet. To appeal to modern tastes, now when they reference Krypton, you see a multiracial Krypton. Matter of fact, what they really should do is tie in Earth with Krypton as explaining how they may be more similar than one would think. Because they have to explain how do they look identical to Earth people, to Earthlings. How does that? They should make some kind of connection to that. That's one thing I would change. But also, now that you have this multiracial Krypton, why not do stories that explore that a little bit more? Explore Kryptonian culture a bit more. I think they're doing a little bit of it. There's a whole world of stuff, gentlemen, that they could be doing that would be a lifetime of stories. I don't know if there's always this thing of trying to find out, trying to explore new ideas in DC and in Marvel, but one blaring thing is you have so many things going on. Explore Paradise Island. Explore that more, because that also was an all-white female island. Now we know that Wonder Woman has a black sister, or there is a black Wonder Woman. There is a black Wonder Woman. Now we see more of a multiracial island of women. So whether it's in Marvel or in DC, especially when they do these ultimate books, and that's something that they dropped the ball on as well, Darryl. You might want to explain that also. There used to be, I'm sorry, Marvel goes into What If here and there. I don't know, there's been probably five or six different What If comic books. DC has Elseworlds, where they talk about alternate universes and alternate storylines, alternate canon. They need to go back into that more. And when they do have an Ultimate Spider-Man, or they have an all-star DC comic book where they have these alternate storylines, why do they just do the same? They do the same character over again, actually. Why not have it slightly different? I mean, really different. I hate to be on this multiracial thing, but that's what's missing. That's what I would want to see changed. Darryl, any thoughts on any of this?
Wow, a lot for me to hit. It's nice to see DC's doing their own Acts of Vengeance. Folks, Acts of Vengeance was a famous Marvel storyline where Loki gathered the villains in a room, all the top villains, and go like, you've let the heroes humble you guys for too long. Why don't you guys just switch heroes to Torment? Why don't you guys switch your modus operandi? And it nearly worked. And it's a huge omnibus of the whole set of Acts of Vengeance that came out. But the thing with Marvel is, see, Marvel's always been a universe, right? Their villains hop and hop. Think about it. Magneto has plagued the X-Men and the Avengers. Okay? Doctor Doom has plagued. There isn't a hero that Doctor Doom hasn't interacted with. You know? Heck, our late great Dwayne McDuffie. He made a living, and when he took over a book, bringing in a character that you wouldn't normally associate, or a villain you wouldn't normally associate with the heroes of the book, and just, I'm going to throw him in for a couple of issues, and let's see how the hero reacts to it, all right? And DC's forgetting something. When they're doing this, one of their famous stories, Kingdom Come, was essentially the Superman story in that got its start when Joker killed everybody at the Daily Planet. But you'd never have him interacting with Superman unless it's a big event. See, DC has separated each one of our comic lines as its own universe. We rarely have crossovers. That's the thing. If I was in control of DC, or if I was in control of a comic company, I would tighten editorial control. I'm like, yo, it's a giant universe. We are creating a giant universe. So here you go walking down the street, all right, and say you're a Teen Titan walking down the street. There's Superman flying overhead. You know, but coordinate with the editors. Coordinate. Make your universe a place of infinite ideas, but that's just it. You have to have infinite ideas. I mean, we went on last week about the umpteenth time that Batman's fighting Joker and how that makes no sense. Even though Joker is a great villain, by this point here, Joker should have a bullet in his head. But say Joker interacted with somebody like Blue Beetle or something. How would Blue Beetle handle it? You know, and to piggyback what Captain says, the one lesson that I've told people from the show in Lifetime, as well as, a hero is only as good as the threat the villain poses. If the villain isn't a credible threat, the hero suffers. That's one of the reasons why the last couple of years of Marvel I've hated. Because they've had the heroes infighting with each other. If I'm a villain in the Marvel universe, I'm like, ha, you guys keep on fighting, I'm going to go rob this bank now. Ha, you guys keep on fighting, I'm going to go and steal this super weapon. It's nothing you want to read. Who wants to read comics where the heroes are fighting each other more than fighting villains? Are we that sadomasochistic? I guess we are, because we're talking about it. But, you know, people have got to realize, all right, and it comes to the comic companies, and it'll go back to my original premise with all of this, okay? You come out and you say, yeah, we're gonna make a big event where the villain switches the heroes they fight. Meanwhile, quietly, Marvel just had a couple of great storylines before they did all of their stupid things with renumbering and everything, where Dr. Octopus was taking control of Iron Man. You had that. Well, Doc's a Spidey villain, but it was quiet. It was hush-hush, all right? The Punisher Max did a great storyline revolving around how the parallels between Kingpin, Bullseye, and Punisher. You don't normally see Bullseye involved with the Punisher. But, again, quietly under the radar. They're doing stories to get you hooked. It's not ad space. It's not, get it. You got to go out and get it. This is now a big event. This is now change of direction. All of that carnival barking, that grabs people's attention for like 5 minutes. If the story sucks, no one's buying it after the first couple of issues. Back to you, Afrin.
Yeah, you brought up some pretty good points. I forgot about this stuff. They did do it so casually. Like the other storylines you just mentioned, the Bullseye connection, they were done very smooth. So now they can always tap into this when they want to. They can go. It doesn't always have to be. They don't always have to be glued or pigeonholed to this one villain forever wedded to this one hero. Marvel's been doing this all the time. DC, I mean, there should be interactions with the Joker with Superman anyway, especially because the Joker is such a madman. He is he is literally insane. And we know that with Superman, he is highly moral, the quintessential Boy Scout. He does everything he can to deal with keeping people alive. I mean, his mission is very clear. Batman, on the other hand, you can see how Batman and Joker match up. But with how would Superman could not deal with what Batman has seen out of the Joker? I don't think he could. They need to explore that.
Yeah, but you see, and this is where, and you guys have heard me rip on Geoff Johns and Grant Morrison and Brian Michael Bendis, and you've heard me rip on them constantly because I think sometimes they fall into lazy storytelling. But the one thing, all of these guys, and I'm throwing my boy Kurt Busiek in there too, I'll throw in Mark Waid in there too, I brought up Dwayne McDuffie. One thing is when they have team books, they always like to throw in new characters. So you get another set of interactions that you wouldn't normally get. I love Bendis for putting Luke Cage in the Avengers. They go like, at the beginning, oh, why is Luke Cage in the event? Why is Iron Fist, Luke Cage, Spidey, Wolverine, they're in the Avengers now? How are they in the Avengers? But it was a whole new set of interactions reading it. When Morrison was on JLA, he brought in Steel. He brought in Huntress. He brought in, people you didn't think that were JLAers. Hey, Plastic Man. And he got rich stories out of their interactions with other members of the team, and they started seeing threats, that were out of their comfort zone. And we got a chance to see, well, how are they going to react to these threats? How are they going? And listen, if Shaquille O'Neal portrayed the Steel that was in JLA, that would have been a much better movie, because he was like a pseudo Iron Man. Why do we have Steel on the team if we already have Superman? Well, Steel became their tech dude. He became their tech dude. At one point, he wired the whole watchtower like a suit of armor when they were fighting Prometheus before they killed off his potential. But there was stuff that they did. And interactions with heroes you never saw them with, and villains you never saw them with, that opened up interesting possibilities where, okay, and that worked there. Let's explore this further in our own book. And that's the thing DC constantly drops the ball on, because they got the more iconic heroes.
Well, one quick thing, and on that iconic heroes thing, when you start to, because as you're talking, I'm reminiscing about even recent issues I've read within the last couple of days on the Marvel side, where the dialogue is more relaxed. The dialogue is actually more real on the Marvel side on many occasions. DC taps into this sometimes. Sometimes, this kind of rivalry between Batman and Green Lantern, which is kind of interesting, but Marvel does it better. There's a recent Avengers storyline, this, Darryl, where you just mentioned Luke Cage. Luke Cage bought, or rather, he bought Avengers Mansion for $1. After this major fiasco, which I'm not going to get into, he casually says to Tony Stark, listen, can I borrow $5? And Tony Stark says, yeah, I guess. So he gives him $5. Okay, here, man. You bought back Avengers Mansion. The way he did it, it was like somebody would really do that. it's other conversations. There's another part in that same story where was Damian Hellstrom, Darryl, who is the son of Satan.
Yeah.
So for the listener, for the new listener, all types of entities, Hercules, Zeus, they're also characters in Marvel and in DC also. So Satan is a character in Marvel. His son says something about, this is going to rock. but he didn't complete the sentence. This is insider, but the way that they talk, the dialogue is like funny, realistic dialogue. It was sexual innuendo, references, you know, all kinds of wacky things to say. DC is so, they're so stuck in the, they got sticks up their asses, Daryl. let's just keep it 100. DC, as I think about it, they do not have smooth dialogue. You know, that's the problem. They gotta take off their dresses or something.
Well,
and relax. Take off the shoes and have actual conversations. They do it a little bit here and there, but they've never been as comfortable with dialogue as Marvel is.
Well, that's the one thing that Captain and our talks, Captain always says, that, yo, DC's got the more marketable brand. If they could ever get this together for a movie, it would blow Avengers out of the water. Because forever, since the Justice League was created with the Big Seven, we have wanted to see a Justice League movie, all right? And you facilitate the movie by, in the books, exposing everyone to credible threats, exposing and working on the team dialogue and working on this. If you can't get the dialogue to work in the comic books, how are you going to get it to work in the movie? Hell, think about it. Before a JLA movie, we're getting Guardians of the Galaxy from Marvel. If I told you that 25 years ago, you would think I was nuts. But that's what's going to happen, because Marvel has, well, not perfected, but they have stumbled upon a way to layer their movies, to get everything out there, to make people interested in them. DC.
Well, you know what? I do want to go to the chat room. We've got about 5 minutes remaining, unfortunately, gentlemen. I wish there was a way to make this show a little bit longer, but maybe one day I'll figure out how to do that, to make it a little longer for these discussions. But going into the chat room, first of all, a friend of the show, Q-Storm, says, it must not be as easy, as Daryl is making it out to be. I would think they would have done that by now. He's talking about, you know, being able to have these other heroes and villains interact. Now, he also references Superman and the Joker meeting in the 80s. There have been cross-hero villain matchups for many years, but they've always been one-shots. They've always been incidental. They've never really been smooth, continuity-driven things. When Daryl talked about Bullseye and Kingpin and the Punisher and all that stuff, that was very smooth. You know, it was a very cemented story arc. Very natural, very cemented. The stuff you're talking about that happened in the 80s, you know, the Joker meets Superman one day, something, it was never done where it was more of a continuity thing or anything with any real permanence. These other things, Marvel has done this stuff with a great degree of permanence. Do you think that
the
this
world's
is
finest
upcoming?
Movie.
Say it again.
The world's finest movie. Batman, Superman. Check out the Joker Superman interaction when Joker discovers the kryptonite. World's finest, the first Batman Superman animated movie together. Check out the interaction there with Joker and Superman. It put Joker as a credible threat. The problem is they never follow up on these things. And that's what gets frustrating to readers because, okay, why are they making it sound like here in No Man's Land that Bruce Wayne is meeting Luthor for the first time when in JLA, you know, they had Luthor's Injustice League try to buy out the JLA underneath, and it was Bruce Wayne that was countering his move every step of the way. You know, that's why I said tighter editorial control. You guys got guys, essentially they think fans are dumb. We've never seen it before. If they're going to treat us like wrestling fans, wasn't that dude evil just like 6 months ago? Now he's good.
Well, listen, we only got about 2 minutes remaining, gentlemen. We're going to have to pick this up again next week. Just one quick thing. They need to explore that Bathos Island thing, man. And it's so funny. They did it as such an incidental thing. No one thought. This, I told you the mindset, Daryl. That what they said was, well, we had blacks on Krypton, but they were on a separate island. So you had apartheid in Krypton, is what you're saying. This highly advanced civilization, the black Kryptonians. Oh, we had them, but they were on a separate island. All right, gentlemen. Been a pleasure. Q, Tricknology, Black Ronin, if you like, step on in next door. We're going to do Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk. As always, been a pleasure. Let's get into the next show. As always.
Thanks for the support, guys.
Spock with a beard?
I think not.
My name is Peoples. You know why they call me that? Because you always takes care of your people. Yeah, actually, more or less. You play golf?
Not for a while.
Golf is fun. Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods. I like him. You got a bow?
I had one.
What kind of bow you had?
Boston Whaler.
Boston Whaler. You went around the world, right? You know something? I got money longer than train smoke. I never been on an airplane once my whole goddamn life.
Let me ask you something. Yeah.
Cinco familia, five family, five borough, one law.
Okay.
You an interesting motherfucker. You got like a business card or something?
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man. What is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the Ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor. All hail funk and lesson. Sweet tongue, grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in a cosmos where no time and space do exist. Vibe in the midst of the chaos. Mortals label me as a lock.
You're traveling to another radio show. A broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio. With your guide, Deeper, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
Tiger Woods, I like him. folks, that was the great Jeffrey Wright from the Shaft Samuel Jackson vehicle from about 10 years ago. Definitely an excellent B-grade movie, but his particular portrayal of the Dominican drug dealer, Peoples, something very frightening. That's where you saw that this was going to be we're going to be on a ride, that he is a talent. Once again, welcome to Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk. This is the second part, the second hour. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. Let's go to a quick, and I do mean quick, groove break, and then we'll get into the festivities. We'll get into the discourse. This is Valerie June, Working Woman Blues. We'll be back in a few moments. Again, Valerie June. Definitely check for her, folks. Go to YouTube and check out her latest video, Valerie June, Working Woman Blues, giving you a little bit of folksy blues groove. All right, folks, it's Afternoon featuring Captain Kirk time. And speaking of the Captain, let's get to it, man.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one has gone before.
Okay, all right. This just in from the message board. From Martin Timothy Adams. For those of you who do not remember, do not recall, Martin Timothy Adams is a friend of the show. We have interviewed him several times. He is the head coach of the Chippewa Valley Predators. So let me read to you. Chippewa Valley Predators of the Northern Elite Football League will be having their combine next Saturday at the Eau Claire Indoor Sports Center, 3 p.m. in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. This combine is free, of course. Registration is at 2:30 p.m. If you have any questions, contact head coach Martin Adams at 715-379-8891. I repeat, Martin Adams at 715-379-8891 or general manager Matt Risen at 715-559-7417. The Chippewa Valley Predators' goal is to help players advance to the next level. We will give you the opportunity to showcase your skills on the field and provide you with a film and highlight video. There you have it, friends. Back over to you, Sir Apple Nerd. Let's get it started.
Yes, you know, I'm going to change things around briefly, folks. We're going to get into the real meaty topics in a moment, but I do want to just mention a quick scientific blurb that I find interesting. And also I'm going to mention it because, Neil deGrasse Tyson, who we hope to have on our show the first quarter of 2013, who really has become the face of science, Natural History Museum director, as well as the, successor to Carl Sagan. So he's coming up with his show, his version of Cosmos. For those who remember this popular show on PBS years ago, the late Carl Sagan he did take Dr. Tyson under his wing. So he's going to have his own Cosmos TV show next year. Anyway, there has to be a place, folks, where black folks speak about scientific data. I'm sorry, everything can't be about Chris Brown and Rihanna and that whole minstrel show, although we're going to talk about Chris Brown later on. Anyway, I found this on Huffington Post, and I'm always curious about where science fiction and science merge, Captain. There's always this quest, ladies and gentlemen, for immortality. We're always worried about how young we look, how we maintain as we age, or some way to arrest the aging process. So now they're talking about the jellyfish or the immortal jellyfish. This is something I really did not know. But the jellyfish is probably one of the few creatures on the planet that essentially, on a biological level, is immortal. Now, what they're saying is there's a way that the jellyfish is able to transform itself or transform its cells back into a youthful state. It's always able to regenerate, and it's always able to regenerate into, I guess, the first stage of life. So it's always able to become young again. And you know what's going to happen, folks? You know, just like true science fiction, scientists are looking close at this creature and figuring out how do we do this on the human level. The process that the jellyfish goes through is called transdifferentiation. And it essentially is able to absorb its cells and then transform it into new cells. So I'm just putting it out there. Go to Huffington Post. Check this out about the immortal jellyfish. The show is called Afro Nerd. So I'm going to bring up some scientific data here and there. Technology, science, video gaming, you know the whole shtick. That's what we do. So I want to get out there. I just think it's interesting. I just find it interesting. I like it here. So I'd like to see the 15th installment of Captain America in the year 3000, or rather 2100. Highly doubtful, but somehow when we dream of these things, you know, when we can conceive it, we can achieve it. So if we can conceive of immortality, we may not be able to take advantage of it, but maybe in a few centuries we will see real life Methuselahs. Anyway, I'm just putting it out there. Folks, let's move along to the stuff you really want to talk about. I'm trying, folks. You know, if you reject it, so be it, but I'm trying to
infuse some scientific data into your buttocks so you can move along with yourselves. Call in number 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. All right, let's get into the stuff you really want to talk about. First up, you know, it's just murder, death, kill, Captain. Murder, death, kill, MDK. Where do we go? I don't know who to take first. I guess we should talk about this young football player, since you mentioned our friend of the show and his Chippewa Valley Predators. This tragedy with why can't I remember his name, Captain? You know who he is. I'm confused with Jovan Davis, but that's the young man in Florida. Who is the football player from the Kansas City Chiefs who committed suicide? He's the running back?
Yeah, no, no, you got me taken aback right now.
Oh, Jovan Belcher.
Yeah, I believe he's the linebacker.
Yeah, Jovan Belcher. I'm just going to play the clip, and then we will elucidate. But it's a tragedy. He killed himself, and he killed the mother of his child. So, wow. 25 years old. His lady friend was 22. Let's get to it. This is courtesy of ABC News. Hold on, folks.
Kansas City, where the linebacker Jovan Belcher was supposed to be taking the field today for the Chiefs. That is not going to happen, however. Police say Belcher killed his girlfriend on Saturday and then killed himself in front of his coach. Caught in the middle here, the most innocent conceivable victim, the couple's three-month-old baby girl. ABC's John Shrifton is outside Arrowhead Stadium, where today's game will still be played. John.
Well, Dan, good morning. We're actually right here on the field, and this morning we are learning more about what may have happened in the hours leading up to this tragedy. According to the Kansas City Star, it all started around 1 o'clock Saturday morning when Belcher's girlfriend got home late from a concert she attended with friends. Well, tragically, it ended 7 hours later when Belcher shot her several times, then drove to the Chiefs stadium, where he then took his own life. This morning, investigators in Kansas City are trying to figure out why NFL linebacker Jovan Belcher killed his 22-year-old girlfriend, then took his own life.
We heard that they had been arguing in the past, as far as recently they've been arguing before the shooting occurred.
Police say Saturday morning he shot and killed Cassandra Perkins, the mother of his three-month-old daughter, at their home. Police say Belcher's own mother was in the house, saw the murder, and called 911. He then jumped in his car and drove to Arrowhead Stadium to the team's practice facility. With a gun held to his head in the parking lot, authorities say he began talking to coaches.
When he pulled up, they were never in danger. He never threatened them or anything. They talked for a little bit.
Suddenly, he walked away, taking his own life as the Chiefs' head coach and the general manager witnessed in horror. The Kansas City Chiefs released a statement saying, quote, "The entire Chiefs family is deeply saddened by today's events, and our collective hearts are heavy with sympathy, thoughts, and prayers for the families and friends affected by this unthinkable tragedy."
Jovan Belcher had an opportunity.
At just 25 years old, Belcher seemed like he had the world in his powerful hands. As a starting linebacker for the Kansas City Chiefs, he reportedly earned millions in the NFL, living the good life, driving a Bentley seen here being towed away after the crime.
He always seemed like a nice guy. I wouldn't never expect nothing like this to ever happen.
The question now, what caused the Long Island, New York native to snap? Belcher had no prior record of domestic abuse, but had been on and off again with his girlfriend for the past 3 years.
It's shocking. It's shocking. The child has lost both parents.
And the three-month-old child is reportedly doing well, staying with Belcher's mother. As for the game today being played right here at Arrowhead Stadium, well, the Chiefs consulted with the NFL and decided to go ahead and play against the Carolina Panthers as scheduled. Many are hoping that today's game will serve as a way to bring this reeling community together. Biana?
Such a tragedy. All right, John.
All right, folks. Once again, Jovan Belcher from the Kansas City Chiefs has left the building in a very tragic way. I want the captain to take the helm on this story. I'll give my piece on this in a moment. I'm not going to go too deep into it per se because it is a rough road. But I have a couple of things to say, a couple of thoughts I think the audience might want to hear about. Captain, what are your thoughts on Mr. Belcher and his I'd like to say it was his wife, but it wasn't his wife. That might have been an issue. It was his wifey. What are your thoughts?
Well, here's the thing. If he was just a regular man on the street and this happened, the first thing people would say, well, he was feeling depressed and maybe he was, you know, hopped up on some drugs and he went over the edge. That's what most people would chalk it up to. You know, when you have situations with the girlfriend or, quote, unquote, when, as you said, wifey or wife, can put you over the edge. And sometimes these type of things do happen. You get really emotional. You cannot handle the breakups, the on and off again. But he was not a regular person. Now, being that he was a professional athlete playing linebacker, a lot of different things come into play now. Now, according to the NFL has a tendency, they like to talk about steroids. Now, we don't know it's steroids. We're just using speculation right now. But steroids, when you're on the drugs, according to all the scientific data and all the empirical evidence, you feel good when you're on the drugs. When you come off the drugs, you can feel depressed. But these men are pros. At this given point, you know how to use the drugs correctly to get your chemistry correct. Is the next problem. When you're a linebacker, you take a lot of hits to the head. That can change your thought process. It can change your brain chemistry. And what they're finding out in the NFL, that this is like causing brain damage with a lot of these players, but not normally this early in their career, later on in their career. So it's just speculating right now. It could be a combination of all three. It could be the hits to the head. It could be some drug use. And also it could possibly be also the relationship within itself and all three of them acting on together. We need to have more information at this given point. We just know the act that he committed suicide. That's about it. But these are just things that we have to look into as the case goes on. Back over to you, Sir Raffle Nerd.
Yeah, unfortunately, all you can really do is speculate on these matters because it's such an internal process. We don't know what really happened. I don't think you could ever really know what goes on in someone's head when they do these kind of things, when they commit these kind of acts. I can tell you what I thought when I first heard about the story. Now, the captain actually, when we spoke earlier behind the scenes, when you went into the element of the hits to the brain and, you know, the chemical part of this, or the potential chemical part of this that might also lend some kind of explanation. But I go by what I first thought was, he's 25, his lady friend is 22. You already have a child. It's almost a cultural meme, shouting out Antonio Cromartie when we interviewed his lady friend who also had a child with him. You know, it's such a street cultural meme with many of our black athletes to have a lot of children. Now, you're making a lot of money, first of all. You're fortunate enough to make this kind of living where we're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions, if you're of superstar caliber. And I find it hard to fathom, Captain, I find it hard to fathom that if you have the opportunity to make this kind of money and you're young, that they're so at ease with becoming fully involved with having kids, having these quasi-relationships. You know, when you get to be around 30, 35, that's when you really would want to consider to have a family. But when you're 25 and you're making millions of dollars, guess why? And it's unfortunate that we see these young people where they're not – I don't perceive them to be deep thinkers. If you are a deep thinker, Captain, as I think you and I are, and many of our listeners are, obviously, you're not thinking on a surface level. When you think on a surface level, you think that in this case you can control a young lady. You can't control other human beings. This young lady went to a Trey Songz concert, allegedly. Word on the street was that she might have said something real nasty to him about what she did at the concert or whatever. Or she, you know, maybe she's a Trey Songz paramour, Trey Songz stan, groupie. Who knows what happened? She could have said these things just to get just to raise his ire. We don't know. But the bottom line is, she was your wifey. There was no glue for the child, the young man, and this young lady. It's just three strangers in a house. There's no family here. So it's a tragedy. But, you know, when you mix volatility, youth, and if you want to throw in the potential for chemical imbalance and a whole lot of money, you can't call it almost. And then, you know, this, I believe, Captain, this is the fifth suicide in the NFL this year. Is that also – do you know that to be true, Captain?
I don't know if it's the fifth, but it's definitely on the rise. It's happening more frequently, that's for sure. That's for sure. There's something definitely going on.
Well, you know, listen, we'll cover this story as it develops, but – it's a shame, and the fact that this young man committed suicide, well, first of all, he killed this young lady, so he erased his child's or deleted his child's mother. But then he kills himself in front of his coach, and the fact that he goes back, that he goes to his coach, is indicative of going to a father figure, isn't it? Because the coach with many of these fatherless young black males, the coach is the surrogate father, isn't it? Isn't he?
This is true.
He becomes the surrogate father for young men who are approaching 30 years of age. That's another thing, that these are young adult men that are still in need of mentoring. So that within itself is a type of madness, if you really want to get into it, going into my deep thinking meme. The fact that you could be 20, 25, 30, and still need mentoring because you don't know how to handle it speaks for itself, doesn't it? All right, folks, we're running on a tight schedule, so I want to play a quick funk groove. When we get back, we have to talk about more MDK, murder, death, kill. This is, well, I don't make this stuff up, but I guess I do. This is Good Times, Bad Times by the great band Led Zeppelin. Good times, bad times. Let's groove. Led Zepp.
A successful Brevard County businessman is accused of killing a teenager over the weekend, allegedly because of loud music. Good afternoon, and thanks for joining us. I'm Meredith McDonough.
And I'm Jason Guy. Investigators say 45-year-old Michael Dunn shot and killed a 17-year-old at a Jacksonville gas station on Friday night. He was arrested on Saturday at his home in Satellite Beach. West 2's Marina Morocco reports on the charges against the vice president of a Vero Beach computer company.
And that man accused of shooting and killing a 17-year-old in Jacksonville is sitting right here at the Brevard County Jail. He's scheduled for his first appearance at 1:15 this afternoon. A 17-year-old is dead after an altercation with a Central Florida man over loud music at a Jacksonville gas station on Friday night, this according to investigators. The victim's father identified his son as Jordan Davis, as Davis and four other friends were coming back home after spending the afternoon at the mall.
I didn't even hear any of the shooting or anything. I just turned around and I saw all of the ambulances and the police cars coming. After I knew it, they were just putting up police tape.
It is unclear what 45-year-old Michael Dunn, a Satellite Beach resident, was presumably doing that night in Duval County. He was arrested Saturday morning on an out-of-county warrant for murder and attempted murder charges in Brevard.
We come here all the time. I mean, it's pretty much quiet in this area, so I mean, when it happened, I was just so happened to be passing through and I seen the police rope it all off. I didn't know what happened, but
authorities will not confirm how Dunn was located, but did say the shooter fled the scene after firing multiple shots. Dunn is said to be a private pilot as well as vice president of a computer software company.
Scared, obviously. I'm not going to be playing my music too loud.
Jacksonville investigators will be questioning Dunn here at the jail. After his first appearance, he'll be transported back to Jacksonville. Reporting in Brevard County, Marina Morocco, West 2 News.
All right, folks, once again, after featuring Captain Kirk, we're at the midway point talking about yet another tragedy with yet another young man of color meeting an untimely demise. And this smells like Trayvon Martin 2.0. Again, it occurred in Florida, so I don't know what's up with Florida as a state. It seems to promote this kind of behavior somewhat. Ultimately, folks, I don't want our young men to die, so I'm going to say some things that are probably going to make you folks uncomfortable somewhat. I'm going to tone it down, but I'm going to also be honest with myself and also honest with my listenership. First of all, you should not die. You should not have to die because you have your music too loud. That's just a no-brainer. You should not have to die because of the volume of your music, simple and plain. However, I find it curious, folks. I mean, you can probably tell by the tone of my voice. I become wearisome. I become tired of this trope, of this meme, of this stereotype, this peculiarity of black and brown life. Let me repeat this. This peculiarity of black and brown young life where we die for nothing. I think it's important that at some point we address what we do, what energy we give off that may or may not lead to our deaths. I know that there's going to be a number of black folk. Well, first of all, the story is still in its infancy for some reason also. It's someone's going to have to force this issue to become a larger one. Maybe it will happen, maybe it will not. At least in this case, perhaps this gentleman was arrested. In the case of Zimmerman, he was not arrested really. No formal charges were put against him. And then folks had to ensure that. They had to fight for that to happen. Nevertheless, I would still think that some stink would come out of this, that some more of a media presence would attach themselves to this story. Anyway, we never question the in-between part of these stories. We never question we go from the music being too loud to this middle-aged white male pumping 8 or 9 bullets into this SUV. What happened between this perpetrator
asking for the music to be turned down, and the part where two bullets are put into the brain or to the back of the neck of this young man. We have to get into the energy and the level of discussion between these two groups. Now, I've become numb to this, folks. I've become numb because ultimately, when we're dealing with a certain segment, not all black young people are getting themselves into these kind of, are finding themselves in these kind of situations. But we're not asking what was the discourse, and why is it that this could have happened between within the race? This could have happened and does happen intraracially all the time, where someone says something they're not supposed to say, or they someone is slighted, someone is dissed, and then shots ring out. So that's the question that has to be asked before we start getting into this is a white man with a gun and he takes the life of a black man. Because this could have been a middle-aged black man. This could have been another group of teenagers that encountered it. There's something about the encounter, folks. There's something about the discussion. There's something about the energy that results in somebody being spread eagle on the ground somewhere bleeding. And I don't know when are we going to address it, why we're not addressing it. There's an energy. I have been in gas stations where I've seen youth play a certain type of music loud. I dared not approach them. I would say to myself, wow, wouldn't it be nice if you turned on the volume? That not everybody wants to hear vulgarities come out of the car. But the reality is young people play loud music. Rob Redding, the broadcaster that I play quite frequently on this show, that I play clips of at least my appearances on the show, and I have one where he chastised me for this line of thinking, by the way. He said that as I played Led Zeppelin in the last segment, that, you know, in the 80s, white youths could be in a car and play radical Megadeth. They could play radical Van Halen loud, and they didn't die because of it. That's true. They didn't die because of it. Maybe they had the protection for the complexion, or the complexion for the protection. maybe that's going on, or maybe the music that was coming out of their cars wasn't talking about murder, death, kill, die, nigga, die, and so forth. I'm just saying. This is the picture I'm painting. And what's going to happen, Captain, also, I want you to chime in on this. What's going to happen, because this man, he left the scene of the crime. He went to a hotel. There's a whole bunch of crap that happened after this man shot bullets into this car. His lawyers already – I have another clip that I didn't play. His lawyers already said is already going to draft a defense that's going to be an obvious one. He's going to paint this image that we don't want to deal with, this image of angry, violent black youth that put out threats, and this man reacted. And based on this horrible law, this questionable law of stand your ground, we forget what the court system is like, Captain. We don't know what it's like. People think that you go to court to get the truth. No. Jurisprudence is not about the truth. It's about the balance on a scale. You see the scale of justice. It's about balancing credibility. It's about balancing plausibility. It's about balancing character. No, if no one was able to witness this thing, if no one saw this, and no one really knows for sure, many of these incidents, you don't know for sure what happened. You don't know what happened for sure. You weren't there. The best you can do is what sounds more plausible. Who has credibility? This young man appears to be, seems to be on track. He seems to be, from what I'm seeing now, he was not a thug. They may paint him that way. I don't know. But black youth in an SUV playing Meek Mill at the 50th decibel and tossing out threats is not a hard picture to paint. And this is not to say that that this man that committed this act, this heinous act, it's not to say he wasn't wrong. All I'm saying is we have to stop making it so easy with this image. It's time to pull up your pants. It has become the black man's burqa, ladies and gentlemen. It has become the black man's burqa. It's a 20-plus-year-old fashion statement that will not die. Except the people wearing it, though. The people wearing it, they're dying. But the fashion sense is not. Captain, what are your thoughts?
Well, based on the information that's given to me at this given point, just as you said, you know, you have to, there's a lot more information that has to be gathered in order for us to shed some real light on the situation. They're giving it to you in bits and pieces. Maybe they don't have all the information themselves. If we recall in the Trayvon Martin case, that's the way the information came out. Every 2 days, you got a little bit of information, you got a little bit of this that changed the lighting, the cinema photography on the situation. So, based on what we have right now, Mr. Dunn looks like he's done. It just looks wrong. But we know, you see, he's a professional. He can go get a high-class lawyer. I don't know what's happening on, you know, as far as the family of the child's situation. And just as you said, he can paint a very good picture. I don't think it's really going to work. But then again, you have that stand your ground law. Why did he feel threatened to the point where you have to pull out your weapon and start firing? You tell a bunch of youths, listen, first of all, I wouldn't tell them anything. I'd just look at them and say, whatever. But, you know, you're there, what have you. You tell a bunch of youths, turn down the music. What are youths do? Whether they black or white. You know what they tell you? F you, old man. That's what they tell you. And then it escalates. From the time they tell you F you, just say, you know, whatever, I'm getting my, you know, gas or whatever I'm doing. Let me just get out of here. It's no big deal. It's not that serious. Now, maybe if they start following me or something like that, and then, you know, I'm getting backed up into a corner, then it can get serious. But most of the time, when you look at these situations, it could be avoided. That's the problem that I have here. Same problem I had with the Trayvon Martin case. You follow a form of protocol to a certain extent. Everything is a protocol. You don't get into these situations. Most of the time, when you get into, quote, unquote, I'm going to use the terminology, beef on the street, most of the time you can walk away. Most of the time. Sometimes you can't. Sometimes you might have to be a little nice with your hands, or if you do have a weapon, you may have to go there. That's just what it is. But most of the time, you can walk away. Does not have to happen. Does not have to happen. Now, I want to see, why did this escalate to this point where it had to happen, where you just have to just boom, 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 and then you run away, then you're laying up in a hotel or whatever he's doing or what have you, and they bring him in and all type of foolishness. What's going on? What's going on? And that's going to work against him also. But once again, credibility is very important because the law, the quote-unquote justice system, which is not really justice, it's really just law that's supposed to be based on justice, which is an oxymoron situation. It's an okey-doke that they pull on you. Is about winning or losing. Winning or losing. Can you win? That's it. It's not about doing the right thing. It's about winning or losing. Can we win? Can we get you off? Can we get you only probation? That's it. It's going to be real interesting in the next couple of days, couple of weeks, how this unfolds and see how it picks up steam
see how it gathers, see what happens, see how the rest of the media reacts to it, how they chime in. That's all I'm going to say at this given time, Sir Affleck.
Yeah, you know, listen, sometimes I get my share of critique because oftentimes I have said, let's not rush to judgment, which is something that the famous counselor, Johnny Cochran, the late Johnny Cochran, often said. Let's not rush to judgment. And that's something that is also a meme in our community. Well, we're ready to rock and roll, baby. When it's a racial element, we're ready to rock and roll. I mentioned this a few weeks ago, gentlemen, to our listeners, that there was a woman, I think out of Texas maybe, that she claimed that some men in hoodies, the operative word is hoodies, that men in hoodies burned her alive. And it comes to find out this woman had some emotional problems and that she did this to herself. But when the story first came out, I listened to Rob Redding's show, black folks are ready to rock and roll. White folks have us under siege. They have us hemmed up. It's time to rock and roll. And then when you wait a little bit and the smoke clears, literally in her case, the smoke cleared, and you find out, oh, well, you know, it's not exactly what it is. But our rush to judgment would have gone otherwise. Now, in this case, I do believe it is what it is. And as I said before, you shouldn't have to die because your music is too loud. And I would not have approached these youths. Maybe with this gentleman's, and I say we use the word gentleman loosely, in his arrogance and white skin color privilege, he felt it was his duty to correct these black youths. That's mistake number one. I would have known in my head, because I deal with this myself, I see all kinds of wildness out there that I know I'm not going to say anything. It will pass. And it soon will pass, as they say. And it soon will pass. For my little 5 minutes of aggravation, in another 5 minutes, I'm good. It's a forgotten incident. For some reason, he had to engage with these men, these young men. That was mistake number one. When people – and I see some of our listenership, I think they have a slight problem with how I'm taking this. What I'm saying to our listenership is – we have to figure out a way. We have to figure out a way to embolden our youth, to give them the knowledge, to give them the comportment that somehow I have to walk out of these situations alive. And I would like to ask the listeners, what is it about the white person's involvement that makes this a big deal? Now, the reason why I say that is because these type of incidents happen when it's intraracial, and we don't seem to question it as much. We know words are exchanged, and somebody has to die when it's black-on-black violence. Words are exchanged, something about the words. So there's something about – I want these young men to live. At 17, you just got here. At 17, I know the 17-year-olds who may be listening, they think they know everything. They think they've been here for a while. No, you just got here. And it's very easy to be deleted from the program. It's very easy to be deleted from your hard drive. And it's also equally easy if you have knowledge of self, if you know what the deal is, how to avoid these situations. It's become too much of a peculiarity for me. It's only the black people and the brown, right? You know, and the brown, they're number two. But it's mostly black people, black men, black young males, where words are exchanged. Captain, I know this much. Words had to take a level of discourse had to take place, and then there were shots. What can we do to change the level of discourse, or to change the exchange, so we can continue to live? That's all I'm asking. I'm seeing terminology about good Negro syndrome and all these other sociological terms. I know about this stuff. I'm talking about how do we save black lives where it's not becoming another day? Because in the black community, this is another day. When a white guy does it, Now we have to do something. But the discourse is always the same. Somebody spoke, and then somebody spoke, Captain, and then somebody died. Where can we get into to what is being discussed? That's the root of the problem. And I don't understand why there's a hesitancy to address the energy that's coming from some of our young people. That's all I have to say. More, there's going to be more coming out of this, obviously. I just want our young people to stop dying. And it's a little bit more complicated than, you know, in the case of Trayvon Martin. Well, he was skipping along. I'm being facetious, but he was skipping along with Ice-T and what was it, the candy he had? I don't know. But, you know, the candy. Ice-T and candy.
Skittles.
Skittles, right. How could I forget? I know. And there's probably this, how insane America is. There probably was a rise in Skittle purchases because of this. He's skipping along with Skittles and Ice-T, and then he was shot. That's the story that many black folk want to believe, that it just happened that way. There was an encounter, and then he got shot. What can we do with informing our black men, our young black men? There's something we can do about that encounter, Captain. Isn't that, if people disagree with me, fine. But can they agree with me that we're going to have to address what is it about the encounter before the death? What do you think about that before we go to a musical break? There's an encounter, and then there's death. What about the encounter?
Well, in order to address that, that's a whole other thing and a whole other way of training that you have to go about to deal with that. You know, and that's something that really cannot be done at this given time. You know, there's going to be a lot that needs to be done. You have to look at the black condition right now. There's a lot to be done. There's a reason why people in Chicago are shooting at each other. There's a reason. You just have to look at the overall black condition. That's the reason why it's happening. The black condition is not good. Not good at this given point. That's the reason why it's happening. That's why you have so much black-on-black crime. Condition is not good. It's obvious that black people among themselves, they don't care about each other's lives. That's obvious because it happens on a regular basis. We try a little bit to get things done, but it's a massive movement when the suppressor oppressor, it triggers your DNA. Remember, I always said tribalism is in your DNA. It triggers your DNA, and then there's a massive movement. There was an incredible movement with the Trayvon Martin case, and I think it was a necessary movement. And black people should have learned something from that. You take one-tenth of that energy that was put right there, and you put that in our communities on a regular basis. Problem solved in a generation. But that's the only time the trigger goes on, is when the suppressor oppressor, or what you perceive as a suppressor oppressor, which is normally white, even though Zimmerman was Latino, but they made it come across as white at first anyway. The trigger goes on, and then something is done. In this case, Mr. Dunn is white, so I expect there to be a big trigger. And in this case, based on the information that we have right now, it seems like Mr. Dunn is wrong, based on the information right now. Now, as more evidence comes out, then we can go otherwise. We can go in maybe a different direction. But based on the evidence that we have right now, it seems like he's wrong. He's wrong.
Listen, there's no doubt that he's wrong. I said that from the beginning. He should have rolled up his window, dealt with it. It's a 5-minute discomfort and move along. That's all. What I want to know, I want is there's a thing about being right and there's a thing about being righteous. And I think many of us would prefer to be right as opposed to being righteous. Righteous allows you to live another day. I'm asking for something to be done on our part, some capitulation on our part. I see the Q-Storm, God bless him, he says, I don't understand why we're assuming the black kid was behaving inappropriately. Whereas it's not really an assumption. It's more about something happened.
Assumption?
Hold on. Who made an assumption? I said based on the information that we have at this given time, Mr. Dunn is wrong. We don't have the other information. No one assumed that the black youth was wrong. Let's not get too tribal right now. I made it perfectly clear.
Whether it's a white man or a black man, Captain, I'm saying there's always a discussion before the bullet rings out. Whoever does it, it's always something goes. There's a discussion. There's a look. Someone was slighted. There's something happened. Something happened. But this guy was still in the wrong. I'm just trying to ask, what can we do so we can survive these situations? Statistics, people, whether you want to hear them or not, statistics show that black folks who are highly educated or have some degree of education live longer.
This is true.
The thinking black, which is what I'm trying to bring back to the public forum, the thinking black, this rarely happens. I'm sorry. Statistics back this up. The thinking black isn't going down like that. So I don't know what happened to young Master Davis. I know he's no longer with us. So, I mean, there's something going on, and no one wants to ask. The statistics are too high. The man said the rent is too high years ago. Oh, I'm sorry, months ago in New York. You know, the death toll is too high. We got to start asking questions. Okay, it says, Q-Stone says, the fact that D-Bird is saying we need to comport ourselves so there's no tragedy like this implies the youth was behaving improperly. No, it doesn't really mean that. What it really means is that we have to do what we have to do so we can survive. To be honest with you, you could have easily been in the right, but you don't engage a fool, is what I'm saying. You don't engage a fool. Whether he's a black fool or a white fool, don't engage. That's all I'm saying. We gotta think it through, Q. We gotta think it through. All right, we got about 4 minutes remaining, so I'll just play a music as we go on out. I don't know how we can address anything else. We got such short time. I can talk about briefly. Chris Brown, because I don't want to waste too much time on him anyway. He's not really worthy of it. But I think I might have to actually defend Chris Brown somewhat. For those who are in the know, you heard about this story, Captain, where he sent out a self-effacing, self-deprecating tweet saying that I look old as F. It was somewhat of a vulgarity, but it was against himself.
Mm-hmm.
These young people have to put out personal thoughts to the world. So we had to know that he thought he looked old. Okay, fine. Not much, nothing there. There's nothing going on. There's nothing here. Now, a young comedian, I think her name is Jenny Johnson. She's on the come up, so there's an element here. Yes, she's on the come up. I think she's actually a Twitter maven, where she's using Twitter to boost her own cred. As soon as he tweets this out to the world, she says something vulgar against him, saying, When you're a piece of S, you're bound to look old. Then it was on. So he went in on her about how he wanted to throw some flatulence on her and all kinds of wild stuff. He went into this whole thing. But everyone's treating her as the victim when she put her hand in a lion's cage. So I have to stick up for Brown in this one instance. She's still smarting for Rihanna for something that happened 3 years ago. What are your thoughts, Captain?
Rihanna isn't. Rihanna's doing her thing. Isn't she rubbing up on Chris Brown? She's over it. Let it go. Since we're going to talk about this controversy type of thing, just let it go. Let it go.
Why is it okay to keep on messing with this guy? Stop messing with her. You can't call somebody a piece of S and expect, unfortunately, he's not thinking either. An Afro nerd, I would have responded differently to this woman because I would have known I'm collecting a check at the end of the day and I don't want to screw over my sponsorship and I want to buy my vintage Jaguar and massage some more manicured feet. That's what I want to do. So if that's the case, I'm thinking. I'm always thinking. Chris Brown obviously is not thinking. He had to shut down his Twitter page. A Twitter page that has millions of Twitter followers is a business. You don't shut it down. But he's not thinking. But I will say this much, folks, and then we're going to get out of here. Don't stick your head in the lion's cage. She did that, caught the snapback. It is what it is. Any closing thoughts before we move along, Captain?
They say there will be no justice in a stolen land. The suppressor or oppressor who has stolen the land will not give you any justice. Unravel that and think about that. There you have it.
All right, going on out, this is Janelle Monae, Dance or Die, featuring Saul Williams. We'll see you all on Wednesday. It's been a real pleasure. Thanks again.
Cyborg, Android.
Thank you.